Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porchbills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porchbills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
He called me baby, baby, all night long. Used to hold and kiss me till the dawn. Then one day I awoke and he was gone. There's no more baby, baby, all night long. He called me baby, baby, all night long.
We're back at the races. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hillandale. Sid Fernando joins us, Work Thoroughbred Consultants, of course, and good morning, Sid.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. A couple of notes as we get started, and didn't get a chance yet this morning to kind of lament the end of the run for Barrett's, the final sale for Barrett's yesterday at Fairplex. And 28 years, Sid, and Barrett's had their moments. Certainly, you know, some big names, not the least of which was Unbridled Song through their auspice, and kind of a modest sale yesterday. But it can't let it go by the boards without noting.
Yeah. The sale really, you know, it's the changing dynamic, Steve, of how things happen in this business. A lot of times, you know, we're in the midst of change and we don't realize what's taking place, so we take a step back. But you're right. You know, Barrett's. I guess the as you pointed out, the Unbridled Song. Of course, the 2-year-old was one of the great highlights of the sale. It's the sale's history, but it's a funny thing what's happened. California Racing obviously lost Hollywood. There's been a change in the sense that overall the tracks in California are really drawing horses from Kentucky. You have a breeding industry there that's it's still viable, but you know, you take a look at what Frank Stronach, for example, did. He's a major force, obviously, with the tracks, but he decided to send, for example, Shaman Ghost over there to stand at stud. Right, he's bringing him back to Kentucky this year. regional breeding industry there has unfortunately suffered just as it has regionally everywhere else. And I think that it's a story of basically a consolidation of power at the top of the game. And regional venues, regional sales, regional things, unfortunately, follow those trends and getting, you know, in general, the sales histories have felt that, you know, change. And it's unfortunate that these are regions that have, you know, historically been able to produce terrific horses, whether it's California or Florida, Maryland, New York. Now, New York is a bit of a different example, just because of the casino money and the breeders' incentives that we're getting now in New York. But in general, what we see at Barrett's, what we see at some of the regional breeding sales point to the consolidation at the top, which is evident nationally, too. You know, I didn't tell you this, but this kind of ties into what I'm writing about at for my TDN column this week, Steve, but we've talked about how prevalent turf has become, for example. You have a second for me to...
Of course.
Yeah. Well, I decided to take a look at just the top tracks in the country. That's basically, you know, Belmont, Saratoga, Del Mar, Santa Anita, Kentucky Downs, the championship meet at Gulfstream Park, Oaklawn, which is all dirt. At any rate, nine of the top tracks. And I got Chris Rossi, who's a great researcher, to take these nine tracks, take out all the claiming races, only use purses of 50,000 or more, and give me the data. And I still haven't written this article, but I'm going to for TDN. And it's absolutely stunning. What I found out was that 54% of these races are on dirt, which means 46% are on turf. So at the top of the business now, among the best races, it's almost getting to a point where it's 50-50, turf and dirt. And that is a huge shift in the landscape. Essentially, if you want to race at the top level now, turf is a major part of the equation. And I was absolutely stunned by these numbers. And again, it's a situation where we're kind of living through it. We don't really realize the full impact, but these are the top nine tracks that I used, right? So if you were to take them away and just look at everything else at the bottom, really what you're getting is mostly dirt racing at the lower ends, but basically the money and the prestige. In fact, nationally, close to 40% of all graded races in this country are on turf. There's a change taking place. And, you know, very, very significant in how it's going to affect racing.
Yeah, we've talked, you know, regularly about the opportunity for horses that made their career marks on turf.
Right.
And I suppose the best scenario for the marketplace, if you're trying to develop a stallion and lining up stallions, is to have the ones that have some turf aptitude, but may have themselves been outstanding, grade one classic winners on dirt. And you think obviously the Scat Daddy scenario and success, that falls into the Justify excitement and I'm sure an interest.
Mm-hmm.
More Than Ready, I always bring up as being Scat Daddy light. And the Curlin, first and foremost for dirt, but absolutely gets his can get turf runners once if people that own Curlin runners go around to that that side of things. It works for everybody, Sid, right? I mean, it works. The horse players love grass. You get full fields. It's easier on the horses. I mean, there's a lot to like.
That's right. And, it's funny you should hit on two horses. I'm going to just give you a list, for example, of the top turf horses broken down by the percentage of their earnings on turf at these nine tracks I just gave you, with the parameters I gave you, basically taking the all claiming races out, only using purses of 50,000 or more on these nine tracks, right? This is stunning. Kitten's Joy, for example, everybody knows, premier turf horse, 98% of, he's number one for turf, 98% of his progeny earnings are on turf, okay? Now here's at number two is turf horse is Medaglia d'Oro. Now here's an example of what you were talking about. 55% of his earnings are on turf, so 45% are dirt. He actually is that horse that gets everything: turf, dirt, 2-year-olds, older horses, 3-year-olds. Number three, Warfront, 90% turf. Now, here's an interesting, Scat Daddy comes in number four on the turf list. 76% of his earnings are on turf. This is for 2017, okay? Which is really interesting, right? 76%, people always knew that Scat Daddy had a turf bent. Bob Baffert said he wouldn't even look at the Scat Daddies because they were turf horses. But an interesting point of this is that if you view Scat Daddy as a turf horse, he still got the Triple Crown winner, didn't he? Which is a greater point, and that is that this country had a history of importing turf stallions that produced dirt runners. So turf can get you and does get you, in the general scheme of things, more stamina into your system and can absolutely get you dirt horses. And Scat Daddy is a excellent example. And your example, again, of More Than Ready, you were absolutely right on the money with this because he's number five on the list of turf stallions, but his earnings, 52% turf, 48% dirt. He's that ideal horse that's getting you turf and dirt. It's one of the reasons why he's become he's an older stallion, but he's become extremely popular because he's getting you turf, but in a reverse way, he's had the opportunity now also to get dirt horses. And Catholic Boy, who's a dirt and turf winner, is the perfect example. So there's so much data here to look at, but for breeders and buyers, it's going to be important because if you have 46% of your top races at these elite tracks on turf, you're going to be able to pick. People have been getting bargains to make money. An English channel, who I wrote about last week, is a perfect example. He has four Grade One winners this year, all on turf. He was when I wrote it last 2 weeks ago. He was number two by Grade One winners, Steve, and yet he stood for only $25,000 stud fee, and his yearlings averaged only $28,000. This is an opportunity for arbitrage where you see something that's so undervalued with which you can make money with, right? That's the gap. And he's a perfect example. If you're buying yearlings from him for $28,000 average this year, team in September, and he's one of your top turf stallions in the country, he's got four Grade One winners in 2018. That's a massive bargain. And at some point, that's how markets work. Once they see the inefficiency here and they see that there's advantages to be had, if you're smart, you start to fill those gaps up. So really interesting data, and I just wanted to kind of preview it for this Friday's column in the TDN.
Nice. Being out in front and sensing these, I mean, and understanding where the market's moving, it's a big help, for those that are, you are short term. Short term, everybody, has their pipeline filled right. The way it is, but you have to be visionary, or at least have a finger on the pulse to understand where things are going, because what's working right this minute and what the market is demanding right now is not necessarily it's going to be.
Yeah, you have to have the foresight to know when you're breeding now, for example, and this is a trend, by the way, this is an increasing trend. You've got to figure out that what's working right now may not be what's in demand in 2 to 3 years. When you breed, you wait a year, you get a foal, wait another year, and you take the market. There's going to be a different environment right there for you. And those people that are cognizant of that, look, you're always going to go to Curlin. His stud fee is $175,000 now. There's good reason for that. He is one of the premier dirt stallions, as you pointed out. In fact, on this list, Steve, for 2017, he was number three behind Unbridled Song, who's no longer with us, Candy Ride, Curlin. And by the way, Quality Road was fourth on this list. You notice Quality Road had a big jump up in stud fee to 150 from 70. Curlin is now 175. Those two horses, you want to know what their percentages are for dirt? Curlin, for these criteria I just gave you, 95% dirt. Quality Road, 84% dirt. Now, they can get you turf horses. Obviously, Quality Road is spring quality, good turf horse right now, Grade One winner. Curlin, as you point out, has turf horses. But those two horses is the reason why their stud fees are so high now. In this country, even though turf is becoming huge, the classics still play as number one. And as we pointed out here over and over again, every year Curlin gets a three-year-old. That three-year-old is won or placed in a classic, one member of that crop at least. So he has really upped his game. And if you want to know, I just told you Curlin was three. This is in 2017. Quality Road, four. Tappet, five. Ghost Zapper, six. Malibu Moon, seven. Medaglia d'Oro 8, Into Mischief 9, and Bodemeister 10. So you see that dirt group of horses, and then you take a look at your turf group of horses, and the only commonality among the top 10 is Medaglia d'Oro. If you extend it a little further, of course, you're going to get More Than Ready in that group. It's crossover as well. But a very interesting dynamic. Say, Steve, you are a yearling buyer, for example, and you want to go out and buy a horse and have a chance to make money racing at the top venues, right? Well, you take a look at this stuff and you say, well, wait a minute, there's a big gap here for what I can get for turf. Everybody's paying a lot of money for the dirt horses, but there's a gap for turf. There are horses that are falling through the cracks. You concentrate on the turf horses, you get some yearlings, and you play the turf at these nine tracks, and you're going to have a chance to make some money. So economics will catch up to reality. But until it does, that's where the opportunities lie.
Well, the sale results, you know, you mentioned the New York portion of the equation as part of that,
yeah.
Barrett's point. And, you know, I actually grabbed Eric Guillo yesterday off of Leia Band's terrific early results New York on Monday, and that both the weanling portion and the as a covering sire on one of the brood mares, you see some hints in there, and you know, obviously there's lots of regional stallions among those weanling sires, but there, you get some hints about, you know, potential successes, you know, horses that, you know, to watch going into next year. You know, it's really one of the, you know, the first opportunities to see the weanling, you know, the first crop on the weanling side. So that was fun on Monday here. You have to have your finger on the pulse of everything.
Yeah, you really do, because this is a business like Wall Street, you know, and there's various areas where you can specialize. But one thing you need to do if you're in this business is you need to know, because this is always, just as it is with any business on Wall Street, it's forward projecting, right? And you need to know how to devise your game plan 2-3 years in front. And I think you just hit it on the mark. No matter what you do, you've got to have your finger on the pulse of what's taking place. And that's what the smarter people, you know, ultimately it comes down to projections and plans to meet those projections. And, you know, that type of thinking is what allows you to kind of get ahead and make some money in this business, regardless of what area in it that you are playing, whether you're a yearling buyer or a weanling buyer or a breeder or a stud farm. You need to be cognizant of what the horizon is forecasting.
Well said. Just looking at the weekend results, if anything that caught your eye, I did mention that when I was going through Monday, some of the winners, when you have the state bred program days, and of course this weekend Friday at Remington for the Oklahomas, the Oklahoma Classics. Then Saturday, the Maryland Million and the Empire Showcase. So New York, Maryland, and Oklahoma displayed this weekend. We just came away from Ohio and West Virginia. Do you know anything about Fibersond in West Virginia?
Yeah, Fibersond is he a son of Unbridled Song?
I'm going to check myself right this minute. I think he is, and yes, he is.
Yeah.
Out of a Stormcat mare.
He's a horse that's done extremely well there, Steve, in the regional program. And of course, if you look at his stats, they're really terrific for a regional horse. How do you spell his name again?
Fiber, F-I-B-E-R, and Sond, S-O-N-D-E. And he sent out, he's got that nice late-night powwow we talked about with Javier Contreras after he won the Charlestown Oaks and won again. Then running to Love Ya, 89 buyer for Tim Grahams, winning the Breeders' Classic. And, a lot of the other stallions are, regional. Smarty Jones and Buffum and so forth, the Great Notion. But Fibersond is West Virginia specific. Dennis O'Cork, too, right? Dennis O'Cork is standing in West Virginia and gets his share of winners. But this Fibersond, I see winning regularly.
And he's a half-brother. He's an Unbridled Song half-brother to Spikestown.
Very nice.
Yeah, he was an unraced horse. He's you always see him in the regional stats for West Virginia, these are the types of horses that you get an Unbridled Song, you have to have Major Stallion, it used to be. When you went back to the 70s and onwards, when small state regional areas were really, really vibrant, Steve, there was a huge secondary marketplace for these types of horses. Unraced sons of big stallions, half brothers, good stallions. They were all over the place. And frequently, those types of horses, in some instances, actually made it to Kentucky. But they were the cornerstone for breeding programs in all the regional areas. Maryland was really known for these types of horses. New York, Florida, even when you take a look at a horse like Sovereign Dancer, for example, who was in Florida, not a stakes winner, son of Northern Dancer, Phipps horse, went to stud, was stakes placed in Europe, I believe, got horses like Gate Dancer, and eventually he moved to Lane's End. Another example of it, one of the big, really recent examples go around, Malibu Moon, a non-stakes winner by AP Indy out of Macumba by Mr. Prospector. B. Wayne Hughes had him. I think he made one once from two starts. Went to stud at Country Life Farm for like $3,000. Made his way up and became one of the top stallions in the country. And got a Kentucky Derby win, an Orb. There used to be this program in place, and actually this ties into what we were talking about, the consolidation at the top and the bottom that's been ravaged. For me, I love seeing these state breeding programs and these big breeders' days for the states, because ultimately, Steve, if this game is going to grow and exist, you need this foundation at the bottom. It's got to be strong. You can't just build everything top-heavy. If you want to use an architectural terminology, there's a term called building structures that are cantilevered, which means that the top is so heavy and it hangs over the bottom. And that's really a testament to engineering prowess for that to happen, that you can do that. But in general, what you want is a sound breathing structure where it's solid at the bottom and you can build the top up more like a pyramid. And that keeps the entire game really healthy, the whole entire ecosystem, because what that allows is there's always a place for a horse dropping down from the top to the bottom, right? What the business needs is to encourage these types of state breeding programs, encourage proliferation of smaller tracks, and take care of that part of the industry, which we don't seem to pay too much attention to. So I'm glad when you point out stuff like these state breeding programs, I think they're absolutely vital to the health of the industry.
Agreed. And where the vibrant, particularly Maryland doesn't have a traditional state bred program in the sense that we see it in New York, where New York breds are a distinct portion of every card. Maryland's got this sire, more of the sire program, which is actually something that had a very interesting conversation with Jeff Canizzo last year before Breeders' Cup. In fact, we had lunch at Milton's, and he was kind of not just him, but the breeders in New York expressed their frustration with the sire element, with being able to, to have a viable stallion program within the state, just because the lucrative nature of the program in New York, for instance, it has attracted mares and the proximity to Kentucky to send your mare and get them covered by by stallions in Kentucky and then foal in New York, that has been irresistible, and that's been the formula for the biggest returns on investment. But the thing that does is it hurts the I don't want to call them backyard breeders, but the sort of the meat and potato breeding element when it comes to standing stallions within the state.
That's absolutely right. And that's been one of the dilemmas for state programs. And what happened, really, if you look at it, that's you hit it 100%. Certain states have tried to combat that by having things within their breeding program. For example, in Illinois, you'd have what were called Illinois bred and sired. In other words, if there were an Illinois bred by an Illinois sire, you'd get more money, for example. And that was to try to encourage the stallion population, because ultimately what happens is for these state programs, the stud farm, if you have stallions, you're actually increasing the agricultural output, because more stallions means more farms. And so they try to encourage that. On the other side of the equation, Kentucky farms have made it really easy for breeders to breed to their stallions, because they've expanded books, they've reduced stud fees for some of these horses, and they're actually playing the regional game by planting horses from their farms within regional programs as well. So not only do those mom-and-pop operations have to compete against the Kentucky stallions, but frequently within their state, they're competing against stallions that are actually owned by some of the Kentucky farms and have been parked over there, right? So it's economics and it's a fight, but I think that those programs that can give that can incentivize sires within the state and this is true in Pennsylvania too. They have a good program to protect the stallion in a way. I think that those incentives will allow more people to stand horses and grow the business that way. I think that's a key part to it.
Well, and you know, New York has the Sire Series as well, and it just doesn't. It doesn't have the same cachet or the same impact that the Maryland Million, for instance, does, and they'll draw the Maryland Million card today. This is always a worthwhile conversation, no doubt. Sid, I appreciate it. And you know, Monday when I was flogging the last chance for everybody to register their foal for $400 for Breeders' Cup for lifetime eligibility, reminds me to implore everybody to get a hold of Sid for the Enix and being in the system for everybody putting together hypothetical foals. And you get a hold of Work Thoroughbred Consultants for that, 510-490-1111. Register your regional stallion or your new stallion.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely register those horses. It's funny because we had people calling up this week about they were trying to do some nicks on Oscar Performance is going to Millridge, and he'd be belt. They'd forgotten to put him into Enix. I sent a text to Heagley and I said, you know, we got people calling up about trying to get Nick's on Oscar Performance. The next day he had him put in.
So good job.
Happy about that. Yeah.
I love it. Sid Fernando, everybody. Work Thoroughbred Consultants. And of course, you follow Sid on Twitter as Sid Fernando. Also, Sire Watch as well. And get a hold of Sid and the team. 510-490-1111, Work Thoroughbred Consultants. Sid, thanks so much. We'll talk next week.
We'll talk next week, Steve. Thank you.
Take a top of the hour break right here. Dr. Stephen Allday. Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. We'll get back into the all-day way swing. And, of course, thealldayway.com, where Steve and Alex Hassinger will answer your questions, whatever kind of horse you got. Racehorse, sport horse, pleasure horse, pasture ornament, backyard pet. Thealldayway.com and Luberson.com. Dr. Allday next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The Breeders' Cup is just around the corner, and ExpressBet is your way to bet the top prep races from around the world. Santa Anita, Keeneland, Belmont, Woodbine, ExpressBet has them all. And not only can you get your bets in online or on your smartphone or tablet with ExpressBet, you can also watch the races from most tracks in crystal clear high definition. Ready to get started? Sign up for an ExpressBet account today to receive a $500 welcome bonus. That's $500 cash in your pocket that you can use to bet the Breeders' Cup. Visit ExpressBet.com to get started. Think you have what it takes to play in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge and win your share of $1 million in prizes? Then head to ExpressBet to register. The BCBC is the country's biggest live handicapping tournament with ExpressBet. You can get in on the action without leaving home. Don't have an ExpressBet account? No worries. Sign up today and receive up to a $500 welcome bonus. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. When we're prohibited, National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.